on the ground first, and it goes off the glove and into right field. Benintendi scores. Robert Jr. will score. Montgomery ends up at second. And the Sox take a 6-1 lead here in the sixth inning.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. You're listening to Hit and Run, which is sponsored by Advanced Hair Restoration. Our friends over at Advanced Hair Restoration, sponsoring Hit and Run. Nice to hear you. Nice to have you. It is me, Matt Spiegel, here with you as we broadcast live from the Score Sunday Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And right now, James Fox from FutureSox.com joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. James does phenomenal work over at Future Sox, is a great follow on the Twitters, and is, all in all, a really thoughtful White Sox voice. Nice to have you on the show, James. How are you, man?
I'm good, Speaks. Thanks for having me.
Of course. What are you seeing from Colson Montgomery that fits or deviates from what we've heard about him as a prospect on the way up, a circuitous route to get here, and now he's here? So what are you seeing, and how does it fit what you expected?
I mean, I think he looks the part. I've always kind of been a little bit puzzled by the thought that he would like immediately have to be like a third baseman, or ultimately he would get too big and have to play first base. I think a lot of it's about the bat. But he's okay at shortstop. You know, I almost question the move the other way, like immediately putting him at third, whether he'll have enough offense for that. So I'd like to leave him at short for as long as possible until at least they get, you know, like a long-term shortstop, right? Until that guy is up here playing and it forces you to move Colson Montgomery. It just doesn't really make any sense. Like play him at shortstop and see what he is.
No, that makes sense. And he seems to have the defensive skill set. The arm is great. He moves well, even though he's a bigger dude. And the Corey Seager comps tend to make sense in that kind of way. How about from the swing and how gettable he might be with swing and miss at the plate these days?
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite a bit of strikeouts. I think he's probably going to struggle against lefties. But this is why I think it goes back to the defensive home a little bit, right? If he's a 250 hitter who takes walks and is a 20 home run guy, I mean, that's a pretty good player if you're playing shortstop, right? It gets a little tougher to project, like, if you're at one of the other spots. So that's where I do think, you know, I don't think he was ever, you know, like, he was up in the top 10 prospects in all of baseball, right? I think he probably got up too high. I think he was always probably kind of belonged in that 40 to 60 range where he could be a regular but not a star, and it just got a little bit overblown. But then it swung way the other way, right, where people kind of thought he was nothing. I think we've clearly seen here he's not nothing. Like, I think he's a big leaguer, and it'll be up to him to determine, like, just how good he is, basically.
Of the position players that have come up, let's stay away from the pitchers for a second. Of the position players that have come up, who do you feel best about that you've now seen on the big league level?
Probably one of the catchers, but it's hard because I want them to play them together, right? I think Edgar Caro's like been one of the better hitters in the sport against lefties, but it's only 75 plate appearances. And I think he's a little bit more advanced defensively than Teal. I think that was the misconception on Teal, was that this dude was ready. Like, I had heard from White Sox people that they wanted almost a full year in Charlotte because of the defense. And it's not that it's bad. He just hasn't caught that much. He didn't catch a ton at Virginia. He's kind of played all over the place. So, and I think the bat kind of forced the issue. So they were like, okay, we'll call him up. But it's like, you know, it's one of the negatives about Will Venable this year. I kind of like what Will Venable's done overall, but he got burned one time where he had to let a reliever bat. And ever since then, he hasn't played the catchers together. I think they need to find a way to play these two kids like all the time. But I think they could both be pretty good.
You know, that's interesting. I mean, maybe the answer is to have three on the roster, you know?
That's probably what it is. And I do think, like, they really don't like Corey Lee, it seems like. Yeah. But they recently acquired Blake Sable from the Red Sox, who kind of has played other spots, and he's, you know, probably like one of these 4A type guys. But maybe after the trade deadline, if he's up, then you can start playing them together.
Right, and use somebody at first base a little bit if need be, or that kind of thing, and just have somebody there. It might be worthwhile, so you can have those guys playing a lot and developing a lot. So it makes all the sense in the world. Our guest is James Fox from Future Sox. Of the other guys that are up, Mydroth, I mean, you know, at Baldwin, are these... I like Mydroth. He's everything you thought Nick Madrigal was going to be. He actually is that, is a good shorthand. I'm fine with him. Baldwin's one of those guys. Is he a 4A guy? Is that what Baldwin is?
I mean, he's really good at Charlotte, and he hasn't really done much in the majors. I think once they trade Luis Robert, I think you put Baldwin in center field every day and just kind of see what he is. I mean, we've even projected him as one of these like super utility type guys. I mean, this is a 12th round pick out of UNC Wilmington that made it to the majors in 2 years. I think it's probably a utility profile, but one of the issues with him earlier this year was he wasn't very good defensively in the outfield. And it's just one of those things where it's like not really fair to him because he was a minor leaguer. Because as a minor leaguer, he played on the infield. But for him to stick in the majors, he's got to be able to play everywhere. And the bat has to be passable. But, yeah, I mean, every time they send him to Charlotte, he homers. He's got like 12 homers or 15 homers in the International League, and it hasn't translated yet.
Who are the position players of consequence in the system right now that jump out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a ton coming quick. I mean, Braden Montgomery has struggled, but I still think – I mean, that's probably your top guy. It's probably a right field profile from both sides of the plate. And then a little bit further, like Sam Antonacci was their fifth round pick last year. He's made his way up to AA at Birmingham. He's another Mydroth type, but I think he might have a little bit more impact. All this kid has done is hit. He's from Coastal Carolina. He's another local guy. So I think it's those two immediately on the horizon. But then after that, you know, the draft that they just had, so 11 hitters, you know, some impact ones, but they're, you know, look, it's going to be guys that start at Low A Kannapolis next year for the most part.
Wait, Sam Antonacci, any relation to Tino Antonacci from Park Ridge and Basta Pasta? We got to figure this out. I don't know.
We do. I think he's, I don't know, but he was downstate because he was playing for like the community college, like down in Springfield. And he was, you know, one of the better JUCO players in the country. And then he went to Coastal Carolina and did the same exact thing for like 2 years. And then, yeah, now he was a fifth round pick of the White Sox last year.
This is why I bring on James Fox, because I ask a follow up on Sam Antonacci and I get an answer. Unbelievable. So, look, who could and possibly should still come up that fans would be excited to see? Because I feel like now that Colson is here, from a position player perspective, maybe we're done. Is it pitchers now?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see many more position players. But, you know, some of the pitchers, and I've said it, like, on the relief side, there were some. And obviously, Wickelman Gonzalez is back now. And I think we see Peyton Paulette at some point. You know, and I think there might be a few more guys who are at Charlotte. Jairo Iriarte has kind of transitioned from being a starter to a reliever, but he actually, like, his stuff looks better finally. So that one could be interesting. I think the most interesting, though, is Tanner McDougal. He was a fifth-round pick out of high school in 2021. He's got big-time stuff. He had a Tommy John surgery. This year, he's been really lights out. I mean, he's top 10 in their system now as a 22-year-old. He's Rule 5 eligible in December, so there's no reason not to see him. And something that I found curious, they only let him throw 3 innings the other night in Birmingham. He's at 88 innings on the year. He only threw 92 last year. My thought is that they want him to finish the year in Chicago, but he's still innings limited in some capacity. So I don't know that he'll be making starts, but he's, I mean, in a short relief role, he would be ridiculous because he throws high 90s with a nasty curveball. I think that's probably the most exciting guy that we might see.
How about Smith and Schultz? We hear so much about Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz. What are the chances that we see these guys?
Well, so I think the plan was to see both of them, but there's been some hiccups. I mean, they don't seem too concerned with Schultz, even though he's struggled a little bit at Charlotte. Last night he missed his start, but it's lower body related. It was some sort of knee soreness, and they don't seem that concerned. But look, the big thing with these guys was they need to just get a big enough innings load, right, in order to like be in your starting rotation in 2026. I think that was the plan, was for these two guys to be in next year's rotation. And it's just not, and Schultz is at Charlotte. So I think if we see him at the end of the year in the bullpen, it wouldn't be that surprising. Smith has been a bit of an enigma though, Spiegs, because nobody hits him. His fastball isn't like what it was advertised as. He's been kind of sitting 93 to 95, which isn't great. He's been erratic with walks. But you look at the stats, and they're good because nobody hits him, but he doesn't have very many innings under his belt. So I'd be surprised if we saw Hagen Smith. We'll probably see Schultz, though, but it'll be in a relief role just to kind of finish out his innings load, get him some experience in the majors, and then next year he'll be in the big league rotation.
James Fox, what was most notable in the big picture for you coming out of the White Sox draft with Mike Shirley once again in charge? What was most notable to you?
Just not being afraid to take upside like preps at the top. I think you can be tempted with where the White Sox are to, you know, grab a couple of college bats to try to mix in with this core, right? And I think if those things align, that makes some sense. But the class just wasn't very good with college hitters, so it made more sense to do what they did. They took Billy Carlson, who, look, has the potential to be one of the better players out of this draft class. He's an older high schooler, so that's one of the red flags, is that he's 19. But it is 70-grade defense. It's an 80-grade throwing arm. There's probably a swing change coming. But like these same things were said about Pete Crow Armstrong and Connor Griffin coming out of high school, where their hands are not close enough to their body. And it doesn't seem like that significant of a change. Billy Carlson, I think, is going to be really good. I think that was a really good pick at 10. And then the local kid, Jaden Foskey, from Nazareth, he's got an advanced feel to hit already. You know, he's probably going to start in center field. And then with that, they drafted some closer guys, right? You got Colby Shelton out of Florida and Kyle Lodice out of Georgia Tech, who kind of insulate the class with some closer to the majors type guys. And it was very hitting heavy for the first time in a while. They've been pretty pitching heavy.
So where are you, James, as we wrap it up here? Like, where are you overall in your belief in the Chris Getz operation? You know, I mean, that's because really zooming out and thinking about the totality of it is a big thing. And you and I have talked about different facets of it. But, you know, if you had to grade the overall operation, where are they on that curve right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like maybe a B minus, because I like the moves. I like the hires that he made. I mean, he was an internal hire and none of us liked it. But ever since he's been hired, every move he's made is like a move that an outside hire would have made, right? Where you just bring all these people into the org. And some of the pitching development with the top guys has lagged behind this year, which gives me a little bit of pause, but I still trust Brian Bannister overall. And then we don't really know about Ryan Fuller yet, but to me, like, at least you have a hitting department in place. That was a big thing for me. Like, I didn't even care who you hire, because I'm not going to be able to dissect how good somebody is, right, if I'm not there. But just acknowledging the fact that you need a hitting department and they finally have one, I think is good. So, but I mean, look, I think it's been positive, and nobody wants to hear this, but it's going to come down to them spending money at some point and filling in, like, the gaps of what they can't fill in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we all have understandable fears about how aggressive they will be at that point, which is why nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah, and it's a very reasonable fear. I mean, they're gonna have to. They have no money on the books next year. They're going to have to spend like on some players.
Well, imagine that. They will, but we'll see to what extent. All right, great stuff, James. Thanks for doing it, man. Appreciate you.
All right, thanks, Speaks.
You got it. That's James Fox from FutureSox.com. When we come back, I had a chance to talk to Lucas Giolito in the Red Sox clubhouse yesterday. We'll bring you that exclusive stuff, which includes a very rude interruption from a notable media voice. We'll do that next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Hit and Run is correct. Drew Pomerantz of the Cubs a little bit later on in this hour walked over to the Red Sox clubhouse yesterday and spent a little time with Lucas Giolito and asked Lucas about a memorable moment that seemed to be a big transition for him during his White Sox career.
I think, right? Pitch was yesterday. Thanks, dude. So I was thinking back to, I think it was in Cleveland, where you and James McCann figured out fastball changeup. And it was like, I think 7 1/3 scoreless innings. And it was like almost predominantly fastball changeup. And like,
we had a lot of those.
You had a lot of those. Yeah. And then the next week, I think you're in Toronto and it didn't work. And you guys went to curveball slider, I think. Mm-hmm. But I wondered if that fastball changeup discovery is still something that sort of defines how you think about tunneling and pitching these days.
Yeah, it was. I give a lot of credit to James for that because I basically showed up in, I would assume that's 2019.
Yes.
And I had a brand new set of mechanics. The ball was coming out differently. And for me, it was like, okay, I'm riding my fastball now. My changeup's really good. How can we harness this and use it effectively? And that was James behind home plate. He was like, let's simplify things. We're going to throw the fastball up in the zone. We're not going to worry too much about east-west. We're going to go fastball up in the zone, generally leaning to throwing it inside so that the hitters have to, like, respect, like, that pole heater, like, have to get out in front, right? And then we're just going to throw change-ups off of it. And he would kind of be back there just, like, reading the hitters and what is their approach today? Are they sitting on the change-up or are they trying to get to the fastball? And then we would just play that game.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, maybe it came out and I would come out that day, maybe my fastball, I wasn't riding to the top as well. I was throwing more low heaters. The changeup's not going to play as well if my fastball's down. The fastball needs to be up for the changeup to play down.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, okay, that's not really working. Let's throw a slider off the low fastball. But we kept it very simple and it worked. And I still do that to this day. So, it's a good formula for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because like Imanaga, who's going today for the Cubs, he's got a huge arsenal, but he's been going off his fastball and his splitter, and it's just like the same thing. Like if they look alike and one of them is dropping, it can just be enough sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you're dominating with two pitches, let's see.
What's up, PJ?
Both of you guys. By the way, this is a huge
company. Oh, come on now. That ain't right. That ain't. I was.
Love
not,
that. Love that.
Oh my God. No. The moment of PCA though, when he was behind you, and like, was he trying to mess with you or?
No,
like,
no. I think he was just around.
He was just right?
Yeah, I had a drop glove the second pickoff play, and when I got the drop glove, I spun around, no one's there. I'm like,
I
have to throw the baseball, so I just kind of bounced past it to Trevor, and I think he was just messing around for fun. Yeah,
gotcha. That was it. Yeah,
he wasn't going to go anywhere because it didn't get to the outfield.
Right. Yeah. He's fun though.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've known PCA for a long time. I was texting with him after the game.
Harvard Westlake guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's amazing. So your off season, I think it was before 2019. Like I learned so much about pitching from your off season because you changed. I remember I had you on one time. We talked about it. You changed your spot on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
You changed your mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
You changed the arsenal. Like you just did so much.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an off season of reinvention with that much since?
No, and I don't want to. I had one off season where I tried to change some things, and it just didn't really work out. And I was like, okay, I got to revert back to my, you know, tried and true, what works for me.
Yeah.
And then probably from like 22, 23, and then into my injury and even post-injury, it wasn't right. I knew it wasn't right for like a bulk of time. Like, what's going on? And then, you know, thankfully with the Red Sox, you know, our pitching coaches and the analytics and the biomechanics people, they dove into it. It was like, hey, your arm slot dropped. Okay. So we got my arm slot back up, I don't know, like 2 months ago, month and a half ago, whatever it was.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, cool, I'm me again. So it's been a lot more fun until yesterday. Yesterday had a rough first inning, but...
But you settled in, and did you feel comfortable after it?
I felt all right, yeah.
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 You know, that whole White Sox thing, it's like, it's one of the kind of the most compelling sort of sad chapters of Chicago baseball recent history is like trying to figure out what went wrong or like what fell apart. apart?
Like, yeah, I've been asked that question a lot of times.
I'm sure. I'm sure. But, like, I mean, do you have a theory that you can share?
That's it. We weren't good enough. A lot of injuries.
Yeah.
But every team deals with that. I just think that at the end of the day, like, it's a very competitive league and we weren't good enough.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. This team you're on now is real good.
Yeah.
Like, I love seeing the kids come up.
Mm-hmm.
Are they infusing some energy? That's ideally, that's how it's supposed to go.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, but they're also so mature. I'm very impressed, you know, especially, yeah, Roman and Marcelo come up playing really good defense, like the fundamentals, just ready. So, yeah, it's great, you know, to have... You know, guys that are that young contributing at such a high level.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Good. And then last thing, have you ever watched Twin Peaks?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there was a time when you hadn't. My producer was reminding me there was a time when you had, but you have now.
No, I watched Twin Peaks. I didn't watch the reboot.
Gotcha.
I watched the original series for sure.
I know people who went up there to the diner. There's like people make pilgrimages there to go to the
classic.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. All right, man. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, of course.
Appreciate it. Thank you, dude.
That is Lucas Giolito yesterday. If you couldn't tell who that was, and I'm not sure, listeners, if you could tell from the audio, as Tyler Farengold did a nice job cleaning up that audio and bringing it to you with some bleeps and some other stuff. That's AJ Pruszynski, who comes up behind me while I'm talking to Lucas Giolito, and AJ slaps my shoulders and says, "Hey, Lucas, just so you know, this guy, big Cub fan, big Cub fan." That's Lucas outing me as I'm trying to talk to a former White Sox player with my Chicago baseball journalistic cred. AJ deciding to blow up my spot to Lucas Giolito. How dare he, I say. How dare he? Very, very funny. And Lucas laughed. And if you couldn't tell some of the details, it was he said... AJ said, when you gave up that home run to Seiya, he was happy. So he may be saying nice things to you now, but he was happy when he gave up the homer. How dare you, AJ? AJ, give me the business. That's pretty damn funny. Lucas Giolito doing well in Boston. And even after the three-run homer to Suzuki, he settled in after that. Drew Pomerantz of the Cubs is going to join us in about 15, 20 minutes. When we come back, is Craig Counsell worried about his former team? Let's find out next on The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
If you were not listening last hour, the Milwaukee Brewers are the team of the moment here on Hit and Run, having won 9 in a row. The Brewers, after starting out 25-28, have gone 32-12 since, and they had an 8-game win streak. Now they're having a 9-game win streak. Today, the Brewers will have Jose Quintana pitching at Dodger Stadium as they go for a second consecutive sweep of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Did it in Milwaukee last week, could possibly do it in LA this week. Quintana versus Kershaw is the matchup there. And they have obviously been energized in part by the arrival of the Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, their big-time pitching prospect who throws 102. He's tall. He's got that ridiculous extension. Saw him in the All-Star game for a little bit with a slider at, 96? Throws the slider at 96. It's really kind of a cutter, but that's okay. Who's counting? So, I mean, just astonishing stuff now added in. They've got Trevor McGill absolutely killing it as their closer now, as their former closers are scattered all across the league. It's a good organization, a good, healthy organization. And Craig Counsell was asked in pregame yesterday if he was worried about the Brewers, who are just one game back and remain so even after the Cubs won last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Brewers are a good baseball team. I'm not sure there's anything we can do other than when we play them to prevent them from winning. So it's and we have a lot to do with whether we win or not. So it's really easy. I mean, that's just what you focus on. And they've proven they're a good baseball team, clearly. And so there's going to be a team that is going to challenge you for sure if you're trying to win the division or make the playoffs. You know, I think we've earned a position where the most important thing is that you've earned a position. What you want to put yourself in a spot is where you don't, it doesn't really matter what other teams do. You know, you just take care of your business and keep taking care of your business. And I think we've put ourselves in a pretty good position in terms of making the playoffs and in that position is that, you know, just take care of your business. And it doesn't really matter, you know, what other teams are going to do. It's going to be tough for them to you know, play as well as you've played throughout the entire season. So that's the goal. But in the end, you know, play a good baseball game and move on and play a good one the next day.
I mean, that's very, very solid, classic Counselian thoughts there on the Brewers and on baseball in and of itself. It is amazing. There's a great article in the LA Times today from Bill Shakin, the columnist, about how the Brewers might be America's team. Why the small market Milwaukee Brewers might be America's team. And it's really just about how they are in the smallest market in the major leagues, including Sacramento and Denver. You know, all of these, the Brewers are in the smallest market in the majors and are doing what they're doing, even after losing players like Willy Adames, pitchers like Corbin Burns, the manager like Craig Counsell, and the president of baseball ops, David Stearns. Like, all of those players and people have left for bigger teams and bigger markets, and the Brewers just keep rolling on. And they don't do it with home runs. They do it with athleticism. They do it with walks and steals and sacrificed bunts and making lots of contact and running the bases well and pitching. They can really pitch. And it's smart. It is it is a smart way to play, and it gives you some leeway when you don't hit for a ton of power, which they do not. Of just playing better, they play better and they play cleaner. They are a button-up team, as Cliff Floyd said a couple years ago. And remember, this is a team that has made the postseason 6 times in the last 7 years. So it is a remarkable thing that they keep doing, and they just roll on and on and on. But I think the Cubs have got him. I think the Cubs will get him, and we will see. I mean, maybe we're headed towards another collision towards the end of the year, like 2018, when you had that one-game playoff at Wrigley Field that did not go so well for the Cubs. What an incredible atmosphere that was. And, you know, you've got the Brewers and the Cubs on a collision course and rocking and rolling in the National League Central. We will come back in just a few minutes and talk to Drew Pomerantz of the Chicago Cubs, who also pitched for the Red Sox. So a man who knows both teams and both ballparks. He'll join us next on Hit and Run on the Score.